happened.
We both dreamt that there was another presence in the house. My sister said maybe it was Mom's spirit returning. It's a very fascinating story. I wish that you could get this statue into your museum.
Right, this was a very intelligent spirit. So now you're wandering.
Yeah, sad. Yeah.
Goes. So that part, if you take into consideration...
I swore at the idols and the pictures of the gurus. I don't fucking believe in any of you. You are all useless to me. You have no power over me. You are not real.
Is anyone here? What did you find?
You are listening to Supernatural Confessions.
Supernatural Confessions is a safe space for anyone who have had a paranormal encounter and want to be able to tell their story to a community who will not ridicule them. Some of us have experienced the unexplainable ourselves, while the rest of us simply enjoy listening to ghost stories. If you or someone you know have had an encounter to share, get in touch with us through our website, supernaturalconfessions.com. How much of the unseen can you truly believe in? Gods? Departed loved ones? Some of us ask to see them appear, but when they do, are you prepared to believe? This episode, we feature confessions from people who thought they knew what they saw until it was revealed to be something else. Sometimes they are benevolent, other times they can be downright nefarious. Sit back, relax, and enjoy these real stories from real people on today's podcast titled Mistaken Identity, hosted by Eugene Tay and Jonathan Lim, only on Supernatural Confessions. Enjoy. Very good Friday evening, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Friday Night Live. This is 1st March 2024, our episode 3 for this year. And today's theme is on mistaken identity. Now, let me go and thank some very important people that has made this show possible. I've not forgotten you guys. My Patreons, you guys are Elaine Chua, Tongku Alsatian, Emco Grimm, ZP Matt, Queen Lai, Lim Tek Chuan, Elvin Sensei, VL, Casey Chad, Alexi O, Janice Ang, Jacqueline N, Yong Kwan Yu, Hanje, Jerwin, Dato Easy, and Starving Jack. Those are my sentient entities. Also, Wandering Spirits, we have Joel Goh, Deborah Confield, Jia King Toh, Linda Hayden, Iliex, Jess Neo, Jeffrey Fish, Bibit Teo, Tay Hak Wee, Thu Sands, Elvin Lim, Kenny Polaris, Jerianti, Saritzu, TTB, Jujube Jume, ZP, Devindas, Gary Fu, Isaac Lam, Martin Fellani, Don Cie, Restless Souls, Si Chieto, Grace Chai, Kenny Chia, Ron K, Jack Ong, Nicholas Poa, Burke, Serin Tan, Rachel Y, Kevin C, Lechmi, Julian Teo. There's two Julian Teos here. There's only supposed to be one. And David Gleinwitz. So if you want to join us as a Patreon and you want to get more out of your experience here with Supernatural Confessions, patreon.com/supernaturalconfessions. I did a bit of research on mistaken identity and it led me down the rabbit hole to look at various gods and deities that may be misunderstood or perhaps was taken to be gods then, but maybe now we know them not to be. And the first on my list is Baal. Baal is a Cainite Phoenician god of fertility and weather that originates from Mesopotamia in 2300 BCE. That's before Common Era. That's before your biblical time. The Egyptians recognized this powerful and foreign god as one of their own. And the image of Set was always included, which scribes wrote the name of Baal in hieroglyphs. So Baal is an all-powerful god represented the scorching heat of the desert and destruction of sandstorms. He was the master of the sky and lord of violent storms. Today, Baal is considered a demon and one of the bad guys, according to the Bible, where he is featured negatively in the books of Exodus and Kings and was mentioned for almost 100 times. Excavations of the ancient city of Ugarit, which is today's Syria in the last century, revealed many cuneiform tablets detailing that Baal was the king of gods. Now, how Baal came to be demonized was due to the fact that it was a duel, according to the chapters in the Bible, that took place in 842 BCE on top of Mount Carmel between a Phoenician princess Jezebel and the prophet Elijah. Jezebel would call on Baal and Elijah would call on Yahweh, the old name of God, and whichever God is able to bring down fire and brimstones from heaven will win. Elijah won and history was written by the victors. Yahweh became one true God and Baal priests were executed and their temples destroyed. Baal's name eventually became synonymous with the enemy of the one true God, and in today's New Testament, he is known as Baal-zebub, the Christian devil. In Islam, Baal is recognized as Ibis, a devil, and represents chaos, darkness, and evil who threatens world order. Baal is also sometimes depicted wearing a helmet with horns of a bull, which could then lend itself as the horned beast as a sign of the devil. It is also said in some books that he goes by the name of Zeus in Greek mythology. But today, if we look at how Baal looks like, he is represented like this in a very popular game called Diablo, where Baal is one of the three great evils that we have to defeat. So what is this? Mistaken identity. Gods or demons? My next misunderstood god is Kali. Kali is perhaps one of the most misunderstood goddess because she looks terrifying. In no small part due to Adrian Lim, the serial killer who lived in Toa Payoh, that was in the 1980s in Singapore. He was said to be worshipping the goddess Kali and offering her child sacrifices. Apparently, I saw this in one of the articles. And if you look at the altar, that's more than Kali. There's Ganesh, there's Buddha and everything else. Which kind of reminds me of one of our Supernatural Confessions members' house. Stefan, I'm looking right at you. So this was how his house looked like, and apparently he gave child sacrifices to Kali. Now, who is Kali and why is she so mistaken? So the name Kali first appeared in the Atharvaveda, a collection of hymns and mantras published between 1200 BCE and 1000 BCE. However, she is not a goddess, but rather a fierce black tongue. That's right, you heard me right. A fierce black tongue. One of seven belonging to Agni, the god of fire. It is another 400 years before Kali was described as an individual in her own rights when she appears around 600 CE in Deva Mahatmya as a battlefield goddess that personifies the wrath of Durga. Her aspect at this time is terrible. She has a skeletal and frightening outlook, colored black, wearing animal skin and carrying a katvaga and a skull top staff associated with tribal shamans. Other texts of the period associate her with the beginnings of Shiva. Now, Kali's worship was not always so benign, and from the 14th century to the 19th century, a cult group called the Thugi, from the Hindu word to deceive, was operating at will in India. They were basically a bunch of criminals and they are recruited to form into this cult along with family lineage. And during the peak, the group was believed to have had thousands of followers during the 600 years of its operations. And they have been said to have killed anywhere between 500,000 to 2 million people. They proudly trace their origin to the Battle of Kali and consider themselves her children, created from her sweat. So all these people killing people is giving Kali a real bad name. The British finally wiped out the Thugis in the mid-19th century and the cult of religious stragglers ceased to exist except in myth and folklore. Today, her image reflects the duality Kali's depicted in the act of killing but smiling. Her protruding red tongue signals both modesty and her thirst for blood. Her disheveled hair hints at unrestrained bloodlust but also the metaphysical mystery of death and circles of life. So if you just join us, welcome to Supernatural Confessions. My name is Eugene Tay, the Prince of Paranormal, and today's topic is on mistaken identity. I hope to bring you new information at the start of every episode because sometimes reading this just blows my mind. And I don't think they are very much common knowledge. So if I find something interesting, I'd love to share this with you. Okay, now let us get to our very first confession tonight. If we are all ready for Jonathan to read our very first confession, this one is pretty interesting. Not in a traditional kind of scary way that you guys are used to in the last few weeks, but it definitely makes you think a lot. And I would love to engage you in the discussion later on. But for now, let's bring Jonathan back up to read this confession called Mother Mary Full of Mercy.
Mother Mary Full of Mercy. Confession by Dorothy K. I don't know what to make of it. I'll just tell you what happened, and you and John can decide for yourselves. My dad passed away about a decade earlier, followed by my mum, who succumbed eventually to dementia in 2013. After her passing, my sister and I inherited my parents' estate and earthly possessions. They were hoarders, or more specifically, my mum was. My dad just gave up trying to tell her otherwise. Clearing the house and preparing the estate for sale was going to take a lot of effort. My sister and I took the opportunity to stay over on the weekends to have a talk while clearing the place. We had all been busy with our own lives, and while we do keep in touch, it was always very fleeting. So we embraced this moment together to reminisce about our time growing up in the house. It was an old landed property along Macpherson Road that our parents had bought in the 70s. It looked just like I remembered it as a child. The mango tree in the front yard had grown fully, but everything else, the decor, the fixtures, were just as they used to be. As devout Catholics, my parents had a polished rosewood altar in the living room where they displayed artwork of saints, rosary beads, crucifixes, a 15-inch Mother Mary statue carrying the baby Jesus, and a retinue of other smaller angelic figurines. My sister and I were also raised Catholic, but she was, in her words, a part-time Catholic. So there was no disagreement as to who was going to inherit this vintage masterpiece. We estimated that it would take us about 3 weeks to sort out, pack the items in boxes, and move them, either to storage, give away, or to send them to our homes. The first weekend we stayed over, I had a dream, but I kept mum about it. Not that I was trying to keep it a secret on purpose, but there's literally nothing much to get hyped up over dreams. And also, it's very rational to be having dreams, given the circumstances. But at that time, what I didn't know was that my sister was also experiencing something similar. We both dreamt that there was another presence in the house. It felt like someone was outside our room, walking around the house. You can hear sounds like paper shuffling, furniture moving. In my dream, I saw a lady dressed all in white standing in front of the altar. She turned to face me, and that's when the dream ended. The next morning, I lit a candle and frankincense at the altar. The second weekend we stayed over, we had the same dream again, except this time, my sister and I both got up at the same time, and we realized that it's not just a dream anymore. We could literally hear the noises, and it was coming directly from behind our bedroom door. Footsteps shuffling past, moving to the kitchen, the sound of pots and pans clanging, and then silence. And then footsteps again, and the sound of a chair being dragged on the floor, the sound of paper rustling. If this was a robber, it must be a very laid-back, sloppy kind of break-in. My sister said, maybe it was Mum's spirit returning. That spooked me out even more. Then she suggested we should go out and take a peek. My heart almost stopped when she said that. She tossed the blanket aside, and before I had time to react, she had swung the bedroom door open. All the noises stopped. There was absolute silence. It was so quiet, you could even hear the clock ticking. You heard it too, right? I asked my sister. She nodded, and then she did what people in horror movies do before they get killed. Is there anybody there? She called out. My sister was standing at the doorway, and I half expected a knife-wielding killer to stab her as she turned to tell me that there's no one. I got out of bed, turned on the bedroom light, and dashed out across the hallway to flip on all the switches. Lights and ceiling fans both turned on. Nothing was out of place. My sister shrugged and then went back to bed. I lit a candle and some frankincense at the altar and recited the Lord's Prayer to calm myself. I looked at the Mother Mary statue and felt silly for being afraid in the first place. I sat there in silent comfort for some time and then went back to the bedroom to sleep. There were no more encounters that night. The third and final weekend we stayed over, the first thing I did was to light up everything first, and I went around the house sprinkling holy water everywhere. My sister wasn't really bothered by the incidents. Or maybe she was, but she didn't show it. That night, I dreamt of the lady in white again. I felt a warm, pleasant feeling. She said she's ready to return home with me. I woke up to find my pillows soaking wet. I had been crying in my sleep. My sister looked at me like I had lost my marbles. The movers came later in the day to pick up some loose items, and the altar was the last thing to be packed. What was strange was that when the movers came, one of the men commented that he had never seen a Kuan Yin statue on a Catholic altar before. I said that was Mother Mary. He took a closer look and rubbed his eyes. He said he swore he thought he saw Kuan Yin. That was the first time. The other time was after I had moved the altar back to my place. A friend who had visited me commented that she had seen a different looking statue at first glance. This time it really piqued my interest. I asked her to describe what she had seen, and what stunned me was that she described the lady I had seen in my dreams. My friend described what she saw to be the image of a deity she recognized as Kuan Yin, the goddess of mercy. Puzzling. This is a real mystery, lad.
Have you heard of many stories like this before?
Okay. So many theories.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, okay. I know in theology and you know cross religion sort of comparisons, right? Comparative religions, there is an understanding that the mother figure, right? Mm. You know, the virgin figure, you know, is a common archetype in many faiths.
Yeah.
So it is quite likely that anthropologically speaking, right, you know, as a human being, we all want to have such a figure to look forward to, right?
Yeah.
Purity, mercy, kindness, motherliness, right?
Yeah.
So for some it's Virgin Mary, for some it's Kuan Yin, you know. So it makes sense. It makes sense. But I've never seen it sort of exhibited in this way, you know, where you actually have one statue that has two identities or two personas, depending on who looks at it, right?
Yeah.
And that surprises me, you know, and I'm wondering what it is about that statue that made it such, you know. Was it not even the statue, you know? Was it that it was something that they were seeing? Maybe it was a Kuan Yin all along.
Yeah.
And you know, the family kept seeing a, you know.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe the friend and the moving guy were right. You know.
So,
but no lah. I mean, they rubbed their eyes and then it became the Virgin Mary, right? So there's a lot I want to ask. I want to know exactly what it looked like and whether it was the shall we say standard looking sort of Virgin Mary, you know, or was it something else? The Kuan Yin is described as a lady in white, right? So what was the Virgin Mary statue? Was it white? If it's the typical Mother Mary kind of statue, you know, then there are accessories, you know. There's the baby Jesus that she's holding, you know. There's usually a halo of some sort around the head, right? Or something like that. And then if it suddenly becomes Kuan Yin, then there's like a lotus that she's standing on, and then her hand got a vase.
Yeah.
You know, it's totally, maybe where's the baby gone?
Maybe the baby Jesus that's you know? Swaddled in so the cloth looks like the vase. I wonder if there's a merchandise idea.
It's
like,
supposed
you know,
to be one
from one angle Nima, you look you know, at so Mother Mary, the other part you look like Kuan Yin. Merchandise idea.
I mean, I can't imagine the statue being so generic that you could mistake it, right? You know, so if it transformed or if it appeared differently, it must have appeared with its full paraphernalia, you know, and otherwise the person also wouldn't immediately recognize ma. If it's just a random woman in white, you know, the moving guy will say, what's this statue of Sadako, right?
Yeah.
You know, or something, right? Yeah. So it's because of those other recognizable
correct
things, you know? So it's quite a drastic change, right? So if that's the case, then I think whatever's underlying this story must be quite significant, you know, that could it be, for example, that
And maybe we're jumping ahead a little bit to one of the other confessions tonight, you know, but is it that there is another entity, you know, sharing this statue and it's showing itself to different people, right? Or is it a much more sort of cosmic thing, which is that for some reason this statue doesn't just contain a specific face, but rather it contains the essence of that mother goddess thing. And so everyone looks at it and will see whatever mother goddess you are thinking of, you know, Isis, you see, right? Yeah. Is that possible? So it's like the most potent statue of all.
I'm keeping quiet because I have an unfair advantage over you on this one. I have one piece of information that I asked. It's just one question I asked. And okay. I felt if I put it out there before giving us the opportunity to discuss it, it might just tilt the conversation to one side. So I wanted to really pick your brain and see where you go with this. And quite honestly, John, I'm very impressed with where you're going with it. The mother energy, that was something that I thought about as well. Because if we believe in the feminine power, the feminine energy, universal energy, then Mother Mary, Kuan Yin, Isis, they all share some signature energy wavelength. So if we move religion aside and we just look at spirituality, the mother figure, the feminine figure, then you are right. Yeah. So depending on my faith, if I have no idea who Mother Mary is and I look at a statue, I will see what I know in my faith to be a mother character. So perhaps the mover to him is Kuan Yin, right? To him, he understands Kuan Yin. He's like,
look, translate, auto-translate.
Yeah, but then when he look again, it's like a glamour effect. Right? It's like, then he see the physical object. Okay, then it's not. Because he has now, you know, like how we always say we see ghosts in the corner of our eye or we are tired. Or that there's that layer, right, where we see things for what it is. So that could be it. That could be it for the mover. Right. For a friend as well, same thing.
But that only happens, right, when it is an astoundingly potent thing. Because if it's just a normal statue, a normal piece of material, you would see it as it is, right? It's only because the thing is spiritually charged that you are seeing its essence more than the solid material that is made of. So that is the essence that will appear different to different people.
Right? But this being in a house altar,
you're seeing the godliness rather than the statue.
Correct. But this being in a house altar, maybe surprising, right? Not that surprising, power, right? So the other thing that you said was, could it be it is a vessel of Mother Mary, but inside it could be Kuan Yin Ma.
Okay. So what is the secret that you know? Come reveal.
So I asked one question. I said, your parents are devout Catholic and all, right? So I said, did your grandmother lineage or anyone upline or downline ever worship Kuan Yin or were not Catholic? He says, last time the mother, when she was young, she was not a Catholic. She was into the Taoist side, the Buddhism side, everything.
Right.
Because the confessor doesn't quite know how to differentiate between Taoism or Buddhism. To her, she's just the whole Jostic religion. So I get what she's trying to say is the
Jostic
religion.
Okay.
Yeah, because as opposed to Catholic, right, or Christianity. So I think this is my hypothesis, right? It could have been she was following Kuan Yin or Buddha in her younger days. Then when she moves over to taking on a Catholic faith, in her mind probably she still calls upon Kuan Yin. I think. So, which is why you have the vessel of Mother Mary, which is the faith, right? The Catholic faith. But her belief inside, before she converted, is still very much Kuan Yin. So I think that's likely it. And also,
so you're saying that by believing it, she has filled up the vessel with Kuan Yin rather than Mother Mary.
That's what I believe. Yeah, that's. But I'm going with the hypothesis, lah.
Okay. I mean, I like the idea, you know, and it's quite possible. I mean, you know, if the spirituality is not what is in the statue itself, that is, you know, made of some sacred material or something, you know, not that, but that it is just a hollow thing given an essence by the worshipper.
Yes.
Right? And since this worshipper decided, you know, to revert to her Chinese version of the mother goddess, then, you know, it just has that potency. But because in her mind, Although she's thinking of Guan Yin, but she's saying Virgin Mary because she's using Catholic prayers. Mm. So to her family, it still looks like the Virgin Mary. To her, it probably still looks like the Virgin Mary. But to someone who does not think in a Catholic frame, they will see what it really, what she in her heart really wants it to be, you know? And that's kind of, I mean, that's kind of sweet, you know? It is kind of genuine and it makes faith something very human, you know? And it doesn't matter what religion you're of, right? The faith is the same, right? You know? But, okay, then now the ghost part, okay? So who was it who was walking around dragging chairs and rustling papers? Why is Guan Yin or Virgin Mary moving things in the house?
I asked the same thing as well. I said, after the confessor told me everything, I like, did we forget that the mother's house is haunted? Because when you tell me this kind of story, things moving, I'm not thinking Mother Mary's walking around. Right? I'm thinking Hantu level, straight up. I'm like, did we forget that even happened?
Yeah.
But she's like, oh, after I pray, nothing happened. Eh. So
the confessor seems to have forgotten.
Yeah. So I think the confessor was more intrigued by the revelation that Mother Mary could be something else and forgot about the moving things. And also because I think throughout the whole incident, she doubted herself. She heard it. Then it was a dream. Then she corroborated with the sister. Then she's like, okay lah. She said to me, you know, given the circumstances, having a dream like that is not unreasonable. So she sort of justified it. Then the second time, they both heard it.
Right.
Then when they went out, opened the door.
But the sister...
The sister experienced, but
the sister thought it was the mother.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
Her first sort of theory was that it was the mother's
spirit.
Mother
came back.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a pretty, I mean, that's a pretty logical thing to imagine, right? You know, and who else would be doing such mundane things, right? What other ghosts would do such mundane things except someone who lives here?
So from a Chinese perspective, regardless of religion, our own customs is 7 days the dead comes back. And if it's your mother's house, she's walking around, that's her place, man. You are just a visitor there.
For sure. Mm. Because of the distraction of the statue, does that mean that she came back and visited them and they totally ignored her? Because they thought it was something else and they got distracted.
Because she was scared. she was scared. And then perhaps...
That's a poor thing.
Because the sister is less of a Catholic than her. The sister is part-time Catholic, right? So I think the sister still believes in a Hantu and everything else in between. But for her, it could be that, the dead should not come back. That's not my mother. Don't scare me.
Right. So she wasn't open to that particular idea. Fair enough. Yeah, you know. I mean, I can imagine families where the younger generation are of a different faith, you know, then it's a bit tricky, right? It's like, you know, the relative will visit, but they may not be welcome or they may not be seen even, you know, right? Stand right in front of you so you cannot see because you are so Catholic, you know? I mean, it's a very fascinating story. I wish that you could get this statue into your museum.
First thing I thought about, John, and I was trying to find her number in my phone. I need to call her and get... Because when I spoke to her about this, it was before the idea of the museum came about. Yeah, but definitely want that. They should be part of the museum.
Well, maybe we could send out an open call, okay? To Dorothy K, whoever you are, if you hear about this or if anyone knows Dorothy or her sister, please get in touch, okay? We want the statue. You can keep the Rosewood altar. We just want the statue. You know? It'll be fantastic. It'll be fantastic. And then we can sort of put a little velvet rope and form two lines, right? Or the Catholics queue on one side. Non-Catholics queue on the other side. Tell us what you see.
Yeah.
You know, this could be a miracle. Okay, this could be like calling the Vatican over, you know, and verifying this, you know. I mean, and it would be a big thing in religion, I tell you, to have a Virgin Mary that looks like Guan Yin.
I think in today's day and age, Saturday, you know, I might get a knock on my door. They will try to shut me down and shut me up.
The Vatican.
Yeah, Vatican send people come after me. How this go?
This is such a bizarre story. I love this story. I love this story. You know, I mean, I grew up Catholic, right? So this speaks to me, right? You know, but and my grandma would have been exactly the same kind of person who grew up Taoist and then later in her life converted, you know, to Catholicism. So goodness knows what she's been seeing. Every time she goes to church, she sees a Chinese temple.
Now that we're talking about this, right, I really want to put this out because you know? We never really ask people and people really never talk about this. So ladies and gentlemen, you're listening in today. Could you verify for us, when you go to church or the temple or places of worship, wherever you're from, what do you see? Do you see the things that is similar to the statue, or do you see something else? I'm very curious because if this story comes up and more people step up, I think we might actually get a good mix of confessions of people telling us things that is not really out in the mainstream news.
I mean, yeah, it would be nice to know if anyone out there, you know, has switched religions and then because of that switch, you know, sort of experience an overlap or something, right? You know, and I mean here we are giggling away, but you know, we're not making fun. We're actually taking it quite seriously, you know, and it's fascinating, right? It's deeply fascinating, you know. So do share with us if you've had such an experience or you've heard of such an experience. You know, I'm gonna think back to all the stories I've heard in church, you know, and whether, you know, because there are stories of people who have from the Catholic or Christian perspective, is about backsliding lah, you know, backsliding to their old religion, you know. But that's exactly the kind of in between, right? The kind of limbo, you know, where this kind of thing happens, right? So I'm very curious to you know, learn about these interfaith phenomena, you know. All right. Now the Ministry of Supernatural Affairs will have an interfaith department, okay. You know, okay, let us know.
All right, John, we'll get you back here later to read the next confession. But for now, I'm going to go back to the audience and see what they have to say and their hypothesis of this story. Catch you later.
Thank you for listening to the Supernatural Confessions podcast. If you are enjoying the show and would like to support our efforts, you can help by giving us a 5-star review or by becoming a patron by signing up for a monthly membership fee that starts from as low as $5. Check out the perks at patreon.com/supernaturalconfessions. That's patreon.com/supernaturalconfessions. Or if you feel like showing a simple gesture of appreciation, you can buy us a cup of coffee or two at buymeacoffee.com/superconfess. And now, let's get back to the show.
Your shirt is not a tissue paper. Confession by AA. Eugene, I have a short confession for you. This one involves my mother, and I would like to remain anonymous if possible. The rest of my family do not know this story, and I don't want them to stumble upon your channel and realize what had happened. My mother passed away in 2015, and as with Chinese funeral customs, it is expected that the soul of the departed would come back to visit. True to tradition, my siblings and I felt our mother visiting us during that period. Being the youngest son, I think she and I were probably the closest and shared a strong bond. While the rest of my siblings had brief visits in the form of a giant moth or in a dream, my experience was more sublime. I could see her, literally see her, moving about the house. Although these sightings were glimpses, they happened with such frequency and at all times of the day that I know what I had seen was not merely a trick of the mind. I can hear the toilet flushing and the clearing of her throat in the morning. I can hear the dragging of the slippers and the creaking of the leather couch as if she was still alive and moving around at home. During this time, I tried to communicate with my mom. I called out to her, invited her to sit with me or show me a sign. I even set up cameras around the house, hoping to capture evidence so I could show my siblings, but unfortunately, I have nothing to show for it. I had expected her presence to leave after 7 days, but her presence persisted. What got me so convinced that this was the spirit of my mom visiting was that one afternoon, while I was trying to connect with my mother through meditation, I fell asleep. And in my sleep, my mother appeared to me, telling me not to use my shirt as my tissue paper. This is what she used to say to me as a child and well into my adult life. All because when I was in primary school, I would wipe my mouth on my sleeve and she would have a hard time washing the stains off. To me, it was beyond a doubt that this was my mother visiting us, visiting me. While I welcomed her presence and would usually talk to her by speaking out loud in the room, I was starting to get a bit worried after the 50th day. By right, all spirits should cross over the bridge peacefully after that time and go off to wherever they need to go, according to custom. If she was still lingering around, that means she's stuck here in limbo or just hasn't moved on. This was a cause for concern. As much as I loved having a spirit in my home, I also want her to move on peacefully. So I got the number of the priest who conducted the funeral rites from my elder brother. And I called the priest myself and told him what I had experienced concern and said he would pray upon it that night. The next day, he called me in the morning. There was a bit of urgency in his voice. He said he consulted with his gods and he was very sure that my mother had crossed over. I asked him then how to explain my encounters at home. I could tell he was equally curious and he too wanted to be very sure that his client wasn't loitering among the living. We scheduled a visit a few days later. Throughout the days leading up to his visit, the occurrences surprisingly got lesser, as if my mother knew of our conversation and intentions. I spoke out loud to her, "Mother, you need to go. Go in peace. I'm fine. You can go and rest now." There was no response. When the priest came to read the lay of the land, so to speak, he also did a read of my aura and birth chart. According to him, the spirit at home is not my mother. It was an entity that had been following me since I was a child and had hung around all these years. It had been impersonating my mother. I asked why a spirit would need to do this, but the priest said he couldn't say for sure. But he was sure of one thing. This spirit was no small fry. It was intelligent. When it knew that the priest was coming, it left the place. I asked if this spirit could be easily cleansed, but the spirit said this entity had been attached to me for so long, it's not just so easy to remove it. One way was to summon the spirit by force through a ritual and question it. So we scheduled a new day and time for that. The ritual was conducted in my house. A makeshift altar was set up. The priest had a few of his assistants with him. They sealed up the windows, spiritually speaking, with talismans, and proceeded to tie strings and hang bells on them in specific corners of the house. I sat cross-legged on the ground in front of the priest and was instructed to recite a mantra in my head that he had provided. The assistants stood around me. During the course summoned the spirit, we could hear the bells ring one by one in sequence, starting from the bedroom towards the living room. The priest thumped his wooden stick on the ground a few times mid-chant. I tried to recite the mantra, but it was a futile attempt. The environment was extremely distracting and my senses were simply overwhelmed. Part of my head was still trying to rationalize what I had experienced, and the other part was questioning if any of this is real. Then I heard the voice. "Your shirt is not a tissue paper." The voice sounded sad. The priest saw my facial expression and nodded. I assumed in acknowledgement that the spirit was present. The bell ringing and chanting continued. The priest brushed his hand over my face, which I took as a sign to close my eyes and continue chanting. So I did. In my mind's eye, from a third-person overhead perspective, I could reimagine my living room with my mother standing behind me. The spirit was crying. The scene kept repeating itself until the chanting stopped and I opened my eyes. The priest instructed his assistants to stick some joss sticks and a candle in a bowl of sticky rice and to place them outside the house. The spirit would leave permanently once the candle had finished burning. As the assistants fussed around the house packing their items, the priest took me aside to explain what had just happened. "The spirit won't bother you anymore," he said. "But the spirit had never bothered me," I replied. He nodded, but didn't elaborate further. "Why did it follow me?" I asked. "You must have gone somewhere, passed by some tree. The spirit was a woman who had lost her child. She saw you and must have taken a liking to you. She has been attached to you ever since," the priest explained. I had more questions, but the priest said it is best not to overthink things and to just continue with my life as normal. After he left, I've had no more supernatural encounters since. I just feel bad for that entity. I just feel like, you know, I mean, it's good that he's no longer plagued, but, you know, she's lost another child. Right? You know, whoever the entity was, you know, and like, oh, no, now she has to wait under the tree for another one. You know?
You know, this John is a hantu sympathizer. So they can't be that bad. There's a good one.
I mean, he himself said, right? You know, she never bothered him. Right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Not only that, she tried to. I mean, was she malevolent in imitating the mother, or was she actually just instinctively, you know, replacing the mother, right? Given that he's clearly someone who loved his mother and needed that connection, right? So he would have been much sadder if she wasn't there filling up that gap.
Mm. Okay,
you know? Yeah. So, to me, she's a surrogate mother spirit.
I can see where you're going with this. I do agree with you, but, you know, in the interest of being devil's advocate to what you're saying,
sure.
That's a nice feeling to have, you know?
Mm.
If I'm reading what you're saying correctly, it's like there's this spirit who's like filling up the spot, taking care of him. Mm. She's really lost a child. It's a nothing. It's been there all your life. Perhaps, you know, even you may have been in some danger and some past, and she's taking care of you behind the scenes, right? So
very quietly behind the scenes, you know?
But at least what the priests have done is not to banish her, but to help her move on. So, at the very least, right?
That's true.
That spirit had a nice ending, even if she's no longer with you.
She wasn't punished, wasn't. Yeah, right. Fair enough. You know,
that's option A, right? That's the narrative A.
Okay.
Narrative B, if you're looking at spirits, and I'm just putting on a bit of my more.
I know where this is going, and yes, you're probably right. You know that it cannot possibly be healthy to have a spirit attached to you that long, you know. But he seems okay. How long has it been, right? How old is he now? Exactly. So whatever this spirit was, you know, she's not draining much from him. You know, I mean, he's not been experiencing bad luck or bad health, like
not in the story yet. That we have. Not yet.
But, you know, we heard last week, right? It's pretty fast, lah. You know, if it's been 20 years or whatever, and he's still doing fine, then I think. She's draining very little, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, yes. all the MSA sort of alarm bells go off, right? It's like, oh, spiritual attachment, right? It's going to, you know, suck your yang energy, and then you will become a yin, you know.
If you take what we spoke to Syed the last time, and from the Muslim's perspective, these are jinns, and this may not have good intention. They could be using you, pretending to be your loved ones, and then slowly but surely take over some way, somehow. That could be a possible outcome.
It could be, but then this spirit is really playing a long game. very long game.
1,000-year-old spirits, they got time to play.
But then you see, even the spiritual master was totally fooled, right? The priest, you know, the priest did not see through that disguise, if it was a disguise, right?
But he didn't say there was no small fry. This was a very intelligent spirit. So not your wandering, goes. So that part, if you take into consideration, this is a very highly intelligent, not vanilla dead ghost waiting for a body, you know?
Yeah. I do feel that it's a very old spirit. I reckon, you know, it was waiting under a tree? Yes, he did sort of hint that it was right. So it could be a spirit that had been sort of living in a tree, right? Or who had been placed in a tree, you know, right? It could even have been a nature spirit. We don't know, right? I mean, we assume that it was a human spirit with a human child, but it could have been a nature spirit of some other sort, you know, who had taken human form, right? I mean, if this was the outside territory, you know, it could have been a fox or a snake or any number of things, right? You know, and took 500 years to take on human form, you know, and I mean, but I guess for me, you know, and maybe it's because I'm thinking in that Liaozai kind of way, right? I'm seeing the spectrum of ghosts and humans as a continuum, not as a black and white dichotomy. You know, being a ghost does not mean you are anti-human or you are a opposed to human. It just means that you are on your way to becoming more human. You know?
I love it.
That's the Buddhist view, lah. Okay, the Buddhist view, right? You know, ghosts and animals alike are all just on the path, right? And humans, because we are further up the path, have to have empathy for those who are chasing, lah. You know, so I want to believe that it was a benevolent spirit, you know, only because it showed nothing, right? It showed, over time it had shown nothing, you know. I mean, you know more background, right? You know, has this person been in good health and in good fortune?
Oh, that's about it. I just know that's it.
Ah, okay, okay, right.
But you know? The ghost was nagging at him. Don't use your shirt as a tissue paper. I thought that was cute. And for him, it was nothing. There was no mistaking it for his mom. Okay, so that part I felt was interesting because the spirit must have been around.
Mm.
Okay, two ways. One, the spirit was around since you were a child.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure, I think.
Two,
yeah.
The spirit could tap into your memories or if you're talking about the malevolent, like it's trying to win its way into your lower your defenses, it could know the stuff that you and your mom talk about because spirits of this power can tap onto your memories and knowledge.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, we do hear sometimes, you know, this is a totally different genre altogether, right? But we hear of spirits that are either romantically or sexually attracted to humans, right? And for the same reason, follow people home, right? You know, so we know that there are all sorts of spirits that can form attachments, you know, and some of them might lead to bad news in a short time, and some of them you might never even notice. How many of you now may have a spirit attached to you and living in your house that you didn't know about? And it's just been secretly watching you and slowly, you know.
I was very tempted to, you know, play the devil's advocate and be the other guy, which I thought you would be. I thought you were going to go like, oh, this is just a pretend spirit. Then I'm going to play the hantu sympathizer. But the reason why at the end of the day, I wasn't able to feel very strongly that this spirit was malevolent was because when the priest did the ritual to invite her to leave, there was no fight. There was no pushback.
Yeah.
But then again, it could be so smart. You just pretend to go.
Okay lah. Fine. You know. Then maybe the going is also a trick, isn't it? As soon as the priest left, it crept in the back door.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, it's entirely possible. You know, or the candle never ends, the burning just keeps going forever. Till today, candle. The candle still burns.
Yeah, because that was the bet she made the priest, right? The candle finish, I will go, but guess what?
I mean, if you were talking about a jinn, then yes, that's what would happen, you know? You know, it's like, why there's a specificity to all these rituals, right? It has to be a red candle, or it has to be this, and you know, if you can use a happy birthday candle to summon spirits, then, you know what I mean? Every time you wish someone happy birthday, spirit come, you know, because got cake, got candle in a circle somewhere. Oh, shit. And then because you blow out the candle, the spirit doesn't leave. Then, you know, you broke the circle, you know? So every seance is a birthday party, you know? So, I mean, it has to be specific. That's why you must have the mantra. You must have all these things because otherwise, you know, accidents will happen, right? So
every seance is a birthday party. Or every birthday
party. No, the other way around.
Every birthday party is a seance.
That means, especially if you hold hands and sing happy birthday and die, you know.
I mean, that's what they say, right? You know, birthday parties are a very weekend practice because you need to put ingredients, you need to make something, then you have candles, then the holding hands and singing song. It's very witchcraft.
That's true. I mean, it is pagan in a way because it's the celebration of something that is not godly, but sort of natural power, right? Which is just life, lah. It's just life, right? It's like celebrating the solstice.
Yeah.
You know, you're worshipping something that is cosmic rather than sort of godly, right? So, you know, you're worshipping the fact that you've survived another year. Hooray! You know? You're right. You're very right, you know?
So, my last thought about this particular confession is, if it happened to me, would I want that spirit around? Or would I rather you go?
Wow. And? Your answer is?
Knowing me, la, I will keep the spirit around.
And then do for 4D.
No la, because sharing my belief system, right? This spirit has been around me for 40 years since I was a child. Mm. Now I just lost my you know, loved ones, and this is like seem to be wanting to take over that position. Mm. It fills up the role, and also I believe that having a ghost bride, or in this case a ghost mom, takes care of me spiritually. Hey, I'm a spiritual backer now, no? Huh.
Yeah, that's true.
Why not?
That's true.
I walk to Changi, then my mother spirit there, and hey, you don't touch my son, I tell you.
I mean, it would make sense. I mean, that's why we have got parents, right? Mm. You know, it's just to have a little bit of extra firepower, right? Yeah. You know, so if this spirit is willing to be a ghostly godmother, then why not?
Would you?
You know, hey, it's a fairy godmother.
There we go.
Right? This is the Chinese version of a fairy godmother. It's a little bit spooky. But it's the same idea, right? You know, one day, if you haven't finished your chores, but you want to go to the party, she will make it happen for you. You know?
No, trust Jonathan to turn all the scary hantu into very pleasant, you know, beautiful things. This pro hantu camp, I tell you, so Friday Night Live is a very different kind of horror. You guys can don't need to tune in on Saturday morning. Friday Night Live not scary one. Really, you should tune in tonight.
Ask your kids tune in, okay? Come, it's Disney worthy, okay? I mean, there are positive sides to the supernatural, you know. And I think this one seems like both stories so far, both confessions so far, have been more positive than negative, right? You know, so this episode is full of light. you know.
Well, John, and you will love the next confession. We'll get back with you later on, but for now, let's go to the audience to see what they have to say. We'll get back to you later, John. Supernatural Confessions was created as a safe space for people to share their paranormal encounters. If you or someone you know has a strange encounter to share, we want to hear about it. You can type it to us, send us a voice memo, or even meet me for a face-to-face interview. Visit supernaturalconfessions.com for more info. My next confession, and for the final confession for tonight, is quite diabolical, with the title called Something Diabolical. And this one is narrated once again by Jonathan Lim.
Something Diabolical. Confession by Savi. My family suffered greatly under a black magic attack from my father's rival business partner. This went on for many years. It got so bad that it almost wiped my family out. We were broke, father's business collapsed, we had to move house a couple of times. My family relationship was strained because everyone was so high-strung all the time. At some point, I even lost my faith in God. I felt that the more I prayed, the worse things got. And ironically, it was only after I lost my faith that we uncovered something diabolical. Before we downgraded our home to a smaller public housing apartment in Clementi area, we had been living at Eng Neo Avenue in Singapore. As a Hindu family, we had one room dedicated to the deities and for prayers. My family were pious. We minded our own business. We did the right things. But in this world, nothing is fair. Just because you play by the rules doesn't mean everyone else would do the same, and especially not in the business world. My father would host business associates in our home frequently. We had a nice place, so it only made sense to hold dinner events and company get-togethers in our home. My dad is that sort of person. What he has, he shares. He believes you need to treat others as how you wish to be treated. And frankly, even telling you this now, I feel a sense of injustice for him. He's a good man. Even now, after having lost everything, he still only has kindness in his heart. There were many that were jealous of his success, including our own relatives. So it's hard to pinpoint who is the main culprit who used black magic on us. My mother suspected it could be his business partner who he had to terminate because my father caught him embezzling company funds. When my family suspected black magic was involved, we went to a few guru to seek help, and all gave us similar advice. The item is planted in your house.
Pray more frequently and with intent to Lord Ganesh for him to clear the obstacles at home and at work. So we did that. But the more we prayed, the worse things got. Things spiraled out of control. And it was probably only by my father's own good karma that our family survived. I remember one night, I got very angry with God. By now, we had moved house 3 times. We cut off contact with just about everyone. My dad was driving taxi. Mom was helping out in a preschool. My sister and I contributed what we can. The debts that dad had incurred were more than we could pay off in one lifetime. But he still tried. Like I said, good man. People need money, he would say. This pissed my mom off greatly. Then what about us? We also need money, she would yell at him. It was one of those nights when my mother was screaming again. I had had enough. I felt like I was drowning and there was no end to it. Something inside me snapped. I went to the altar and I smashed everything that could be smashed. I swore at the idols and the pictures of the gurus. I don't fucking believe in any of you. You are all useless to me. You have no power over me. You are not real. And suddenly, I felt goosebumps all over my body and felt a sharp pain in my chest. I shivered so violently that for a moment I was paralyzed in place. A sudden stench hit me in the face that sent me into convulsions. My muscles spasmed so badly I collapsed to the ground. Where the idols were, in their place, was a large black hulking entity that hunched against the ceiling. I remember the eyes. They were red and fierce. I blacked out. When I came to, my parents were already around me. I looked at the mess all around. When I came to, my parents were already around me. I looked at the mess all around, but something seemed amiss. The statue of Ganesh lay broken on the ground, oozing black liquid. The Ganesh statue had also turned black as if it was covered in soot. The stench I smelled earlier came from the liquid. This was a very weird scene. I was not sure what to make of it. My parents told me to go shower and get back into my room while they sorted things out. Later on, I learned that my parents consulted with a guru recommended by a neighbor, and what he told them was that the idol we had been worshipping was corrupted. The more we prayed to it, the more we had given it power. Whoever did this knew that my dad was a pious man, and it was designed to be hidden. If not for my outburst, who knows what would have happened? I love to say that things have miraculously improved for us overnight, but the truth is, my family is still in debt. But I feel at least the family is calmer. There's less fighting and shouting. We have also consecrated a new altar for the home and are now in the midst of rebuilding back our lives. Okay. No Disney interpretation here. I mean, it's a great confession. It's devious. It's unbelievably devious, right? To have hidden the thing in the one place that you know that once they panic, they will pray more. And when they pray more, you know, in fact, all the advice the gurus gave was just making it worse.
Yeah.
Right? You know, so whoever came up with this piece of black magic is one sneaky bastard, man.
I find the supernatural world to be very much like the world of hackers. It's the humans who are using these tools and being really creative about that.
Yes.
Because the spirit world have rules. And somehow they just find loopholes around it. And for this particular one, it's the first of its kind that I'm hearing where more prayer creates more trouble. I can appreciate the brilliance of it. And how nefarious this is. Entirely diabolical. And what
I mean,
got to me was that outburst that Siva went through, was that his own or was that a part of deity trying to help the family through some way and means?
Yeah, maybe you know, it was a sort of necessary explosion, right? That maybe Lord Ganesh was trying to trigger it from the outside remotely.
Right.
You know, since his own statue has been corrupted, so he have to work from home right then. Yeah.
So as I was saying, this family they're very pious, they have accumulated a lot of good karma. So I'm thinking, I like to think that Siva's outburst was really divine intervention. That was the only way. I cannot think of any other way that family would be less pious or give up on their faith.
Correct.
Not likely.
I mean, they would. I mean, that's why it's so devious, you see, because it was planted in the one place that a pious family would never suspect or doubt. And there's no way on earth that a pious family would break the idol and discover that it's oozing black stuff.
I also find the other thing is they never even suspected at all, because they moved house. The first house was haunted, the black magic cast on it. They moved. The one thing that they brought with them throughout the house is the idol.
But I mean, again, if you are a religious family, you know, that's a blind spot.
Yeah.
That's absolutely a blind spot, right? You would not suspect that. If you are someone who, you know, the dust goes mortem or something, then you would immediately suspect that, you know. But for everyone else on earth, you know, they wouldn't, right? You know, and I mean, I'm stunned by the wickedness of whoever it was, and they still don't know who it is, you know.
Don't know.
Right, you know. I think the first thing I would have done is reverse the spell and find out who is vomiting black liquid in the middle of the workday suddenly, you know, because the father is probably, you know, able to forgive them, you know, amazingly, you know. So, I mean, but that was his blind spot.
Yeah.
Right. You know, the piety was the blind spot. Right. And in a way, they made themselves vulnerable by being utterly predictable in their behavior. You know, and it was Siva's unpredictable choice that sort of set them free, right? So that's a nice twist, you know. Still a happy ending, right? but let's talk a bit about law, right? So what was this thing, you know, and that was so powerful that it could be inside a Ganesha statue, you know, and not be, you know, rejected by the you know, the proper owner. You know, what is this?
I'm thinking because the father invited people over to the house, it could have been just about anyone going in, doing a swap, you know, desecrating the altar, putting something there. It's very easy to desecrate altar. Even if there's something godly in it, you desecrate it. I mean, sure, you pay the price later on, but you can turn things around very quickly. The shrine doesn't protect itself.
Okay, so very interestingly, right? Years ago, I was at Beach Road Market, right? And they used to sell antiques. There were a couple of shops selling antiques. And one shop I was looking at had a Sun Wukong statue, right? The monkey god, right? Quite old, right? And I realized, thinking back, it was probably stolen from a temple because it was a little too old to be just a statue, right? So it must have belonged somewhere. And I was really tempted. I was talking to the guy about the price and all that, you know. And somehow, before we could close the deal, right, he said, I have to give you a warning about this, right? And I said, okay, what is it? He says, there's something in the statue. I don't know what it is. So if you are not sure also, then you better not buy. So I thought, wow, what is this, right? So he showed it to me. In the back of the head of the monkey god statue, there was a little ledge that you could sort of put your fingers in, and if you pull, it became a little drawer. It came out and there was a piece of paper inside. And he said, I don't know if this piece of paper is good or bad, but it's here. I don't dare to remove it. I don't think you should touch it either. So you either take the statue with the paper or pretend you never saw it. And I was like, okay, I'm not ready to take that gamble.
When was this?
Too long ago already, lah.
John!
I don't know who. I didn't know you then, lah. It was like 20 years ago, okay? So, no, I mean, who knows who has the statue now? It's in someone's house. So anyone, if you have a Sun Wukong statue that's acting weird, that was mine. But I don't know, man. I don't know. It could have been both. I mean, it could have been something as innocent as this is where you put your prayers and wishes. But I think such a small drawer with one piece of paper, I think that's not for devotees, right? That sounds like something for more nefarious reasons, you know? So who knows? Who knows? Maybe it was just a convenient place to put post-its. But I mean, you're right in the sense that it is not difficult to corrupt a statue, right? You know, these things are powerful and therefore easily deviated, right?
Because a statue is just a vessel.
You
can eject whatever it is out and replace it with something else.
Yeah. I mean, just take, for example, how most statues within the Chinese spirit world, right, you know, are just hollow until you open their eyes, right? You know, and a simple little sort of ritual like that transforms everything, right? Yeah. So what is the other ritual that sort of suddenly perverts them and switches them, you know, and turns them bad, right? You know, I don't think it was about injecting black liquid, lah, but that little thing that was done made it corrupt itself, right? And then it started filling up with, you know, wow, I tell you, at the same time, I'm thinking of venom. I think it's venom inside.
No, not you were talking about the statue and there are things there, right? So I've got sitting outside my house now, I've got two idols. And when I received these idols, below there was a putty.
Okay. Filling putty.
Yeah, like so something was placed inside, then something puttied outside.
Yikes.
So I took it knowing there were possible things in it, lah.
Right.
And there were two of this. So I'm still keeping it outside. And I'm going to actually do a ritual to uncover what it is.
You are.
Not alone. I'm not doing it alone. I got people doing it for me. So there's another SC audience. And she lives. She comes to my neighborhood once a week. Her family lives here. And her father passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And she found this knife. In the story, it says, my father used to wield this knife and he tied a rapier string very, very tight and says, do not open up the blade.
Right? Okay. Right.
And he says, I don't know what to do with this. Eugene, you can have it. So it's also with me, wrapped in yellow cloth, and I actually bind the part of the hilt with red cloth with some of my spiritual master's advice. So, you know, I would go to my contacts and I would ask them for advice, not to test them, but really just to get an opinion and a second opinion to know what I'm dealing with and to triangulate. And of course, these masters, they know each other, they're all friends, but we don't communicate, like send a text message, hey, this was what I said, what do you say? You know, they don't do that.
Yeah, of course.
They're not bothered, also. So the first master said, when I brought it in, right, to the car, he says, I hear a bird sound.
Okay.
Right. And I said, I'm going to bring an artifact to show you. So I brought it in. He says, I hear bird sound. It is very, very fierce. It's a woman.
Right. Okay.
Then he turned, I unwrap it. He saw it. He says, wah.
Wow.
Okay. We need to do this proper. I cannot open this now. Because most times when I go to him, I say him, Master, you see this? Master, you know, like, you see, show him fruits, you know? And he's like, you know, he'll tell me, like, some got things, some got nothing, some got things.
Right. Okay.
So it's like, you bring it home, I don't touch it.
We
do it proper next time. So then the other master came to my house sometimes, you know, the Chinese New Year visit me and to collect stuff. And I say, hey, Sifua, you see this? Then he look at it and say, got bird inside. Got bird I heard the bird sound.
Wow.
So corroborated.
Right.
Then he was like trying to open. I said, Sifua, you really want to open? Then he think twice. Say, never mind, next time you bring it to me when he goes like proper tiao tang, right? Then he'll do it. So two masters have pretty much reacted the same way to this.
Like,
okay. There may be a story about this in time to come, John.
It is the bird woman.
I don't know what this bird thing about.
Yeah, it's interesting. So, you don't hear a lot about birds in the Chinese supernatural. So, that's interesting.
And according to the first master, he says, this item, he's guessing, this is a hypothesis for him, right? Can attack both the living, because it's a real blade, as well as a spiritual world.
Right. hey, then it could be just a super weapon.
Yeah. But if I, you know, if the wielder is not strong enough to wield it, yeah, then it's going to be he's going to be corrupted. So let's
all right,
see.
All right. So you become a bird, lah.
I'm a toru moa.
Wow, interesting. Interesting. So everyone, look out for the museum. Okay, listen for the bird.
Well, rental is too expensive, lah. Yeah, I'm still trying to get a museum thing up, but we may just be a storage facility first. Move on to using that, and then going for pop ups, and then moving to a permanent venue, like time to come.
Rental will not be a problem when you find the right artifact.
The Tyson Ye artifact, is it?
Yes, you find one. And what's inside the putty is money. Wow. Wow. Okay, but okay, come back to Siva's story.
Okay.
I mean maybe it's because this is a less well known sort of section of Asian law, right? You know, but I'm not aware of any particular sort of large black hulking spirit. If this was a Malay supernatural story, I might think it's the Hantu Raya or something, you know. But I don't know what crossover it could be, what kind of entity you would summon to do this kind of corruption, right? You know, or is it something that isn't a spirit but rather just the essence of evil? You know, it could be something, right? So we don't know. We don't know enough, you know. But I mean, I guess it was only when it was hidden that it had power, because they managed to get rid of it and solve it, right, by swapping the statue. So, you know, so I guess it wasn't that powerful, I think, once exposed to the light of day. So that's Heng Heng lah, right, you know.
No, I think instead of how I see it, it's not that it's not powerful, it is. But all this entities, they have a purpose. If that purpose is fulfilled or broken, then they're no longer obligated to do anything beyond that. It's not like it has its own purpose to come here to screw your eyes up. It's probably sent.
Right.
His job, he's been found out, job done, I'm leaving.
Right. It's like I was undercover, but now that you've identified me, then okay, I'm off duty.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah, I think that could be, you know. In which case, then, you know, fortunately for Siva's family, like, you know, and at least now they can sort of, you know, rebuild their family. You know, at least it wasn't able to cause physical harm. You know, there were no accidents. They didn't get sick. I mean, the stories we had last week were, you know, those were the bodies, the first thing to be attacked. You know, and yeah, so I think, you know, and I'm quite glad that didn't happen. I mean, but wow, I tell you, if anyone out there knows a little bit more about what this black figure and what this ooze could be, you know, we'd love to hear from you if you've come across anything like that. Or whether you know anything about the idea of Lord Ganesh being the sort of, you know, does he have a dark side that can be triggered? You know, is this something in the mythos, right, in the Hindu law, that Lord Ganesh has a switch that you can flip? You know,
I know he has 33 aspects to Lord Ganesh.
So could this be something not so much unusual and unique, but actually a more esoteric, obscure part of Lord Ganesha's law, right? You know, a dark aspect that was triggered. You know, could that be, right? So yeah, let us know if you know anything about this. You know, let's learn together. Wow, so exciting. Okay, this one I feel must follow up. You know, yeah. What did they do with the statue?
It's broken. The father, according to the confession, they took
broken
it.
Broken only enough already.
No, like shattered and broken. So probably the even the symbolism of it is gone, lah. Right.
Then right. Okay.
They remove it. They brought it to the guru. Probably dispose it to the Sembawang Sea or something.
True.
Because that's where they throw a lot of these idols, like Indian idols, photo frames. It's all at Sembawang. So that's probably where they would have discarded it.
Wow. I wish they had just, you know, a little test tube of that black liquid you know, if anything needs to be sent to the lab, that needs to be sent to the lab, okay? I want a forensic test on that
thing.
You
know, John, I got to say this. When we set up our Ministry of Supernatural Affairs Museum and all, we need to have a forensics lab. Because I had
some
other confessor come up to me because he keep finding hair on his body.
Mm.
And he's been keeping it. He just want to find out a way to get DNA check to trace whose hair it is.
Yeah. So, okay. Absolutely, so, right? MSA Forensic Wing. So okay.
We need a budget for this. Election coming soon, right? Come on, we write a letter to our MP.
So, we do a GSI department, like ghost scene investigation. Yeah. Right? We look for swabs, we look for fingerprints, we look for, you know. Yeah. I mean, it is what we normally do when we go ghost hunting. We are looking for evidence, but sometimes they leave physical evidence. So, we need to be ready to deal with it technologically, right? Mm. I mean, seriously, Siva, why didn't you collect some? You know, I would have anyway, you know.
No, his mother fell asked go back to the room, go and sleep. Kena halo.
Maybe the parents collected some. They didn't want him to know. Yeah. Mm. So, Siva, if you're there, if you're out there listening, please tell us a little bit more. Let us know if you're okay. Has anything else happened? Are you any closer to finding out who did it? You know, or has your family decided not to? You know, not to lay blame. Please tell us more. We'd love to find out. Wow.
Hey, I want to answer that question for you, John. You know, there's a few masters that I spoke to throughout my you know, SC career. Mm. None of them ever, the Malay, the Chinese, everyone, I'm talking about across races and religion, say that they would ever want to tell the victim who the perpetrator is.
Right. I mean, you would just encourage a cycle of revenge, right?
So they say they know. They know who. They can see. But they don't say. What's more important, and all of them claim to be the same as well, like, get over this, heal.
It's like what happened in the second story, right? You know, where it was really, the advice was, you know, don't think too much. Mm. Just get over, get on with your life. Mm. Right? You don't want to know. You know, and I guess, I mean, all horror movies begin when you ask too many questions, right? You know, if you can deal with the first haunting and ask no questions, the movie becomes very short.
Yeah.
You know, so fair enough, you know. Wow, today is very profound. I feel like I'm learning a lot, you know. It's disturbing that beliefs and faiths can be corrupted, you know. But I guess in another way of looking at it, it is because they can be powerful and they can be real that then they can be used against you, right? You know, just as it is the piety that became a sort of a weak spot for him, you know. But yeah, you know, I think faith is I think a very important part of what we deal with, right? So although we like talking about the spooky stuff and all that, you know, but what we are really talking about is you know, I mean, the other side of the lake, right? Is faith, right? You know, and it is belief, and it is the religion side of the supernatural, right? So, you know, and today's stories really kind of blur the lines a lot, you know, and that's really interesting, you know.
Wow, I'm glad you like it. So far we are into 3 episodes this season. And all 3 has lift up to Jonathan's, you know, QC.
Yes.
Next week, we will go back to something a bit more classic, John. Because it's going to be the start of Hari Raya Puasa. And before all the Malay hantus get locked up for the Ramadan month, I thought we can celebrate Malay kampung stories. Next week.
Nice. So, that's the
somebody's
most classic.
Be an urban legend, old wives' tales, the kind of stuff that we don't need to debunk too deeply, you know, because it's really from that era. But spoke to some really old folks, my father's friend and everything, what they remember from their childhood. So that'll be up next week.
Okay. Wow, that's short. I'm looking forward to it already.
Alrighty, John. Before we say goodnight, any last words from you?
Wow. I think that the more things try to shake your faith, the more you are being told that faith matters.
Takes a bit of digesting that one. All right, John. Have a good show this week. And next week, you'll be back on Friday Night Live?
One more week.
Okay.
1 more week. Yeah.
All right.
Okay. See you guys soon.
Good night, John. Thank you all very much for joining me on this third episode of Friday Night Live for 2024 Mistaken Identity. Next week, we have Kampung Ghost Stories. Stories from our Kampung era or from really old folks who recalls the story they heard as young children. And those kind of stories are vastly different from the kind of confessions that you're very used to, especially hearing stories from recent times. How true are they? Well, they are very true to the people of that era, which makes you kind of wonder, what's the evolution of the supernatural world like? And is that a replica, a mirror image of our own human life? Something for you guys to think about. Thank you to our patrons. Thank you for those of you tonight who have given us a donation. It means a lot to me. It keeps the show going and it keeps my Friday night entirely filled with expectations of meeting you guys and sharing all the things I love with you every Friday. And I hope you enjoy it too. My name is Eugene Tay, the Prince of Paranormal, leaving you tonight. But don't forget, there is a featured confession at 11:45, just 1 minute away. This is Jay's confession part two, where she is taking an internship in Indonesia and she's staying in a haunted mansion. And besides that story, there's also one about her primary school where there is two ghosts, spirit of young children locked in a toilet backstage. Stay tuned for that only on Supernatural Confessions YouTube channel. Go check us out. Tell all your friends about us. You got any story to share, any confessions at all, give me a call. My number is 9459-4931. Drop me a message online. Good night, and I'll see you guys next week. Remember, you are not alone.
What did you find? You are listening to Supernatural Confessions.